This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, lovely people. Emma Arnold here in the studio with my co-host Stephanie McLean for your Monday night edition of The Informer. Steph, how are you this freezing cold Monday?
Well, yeah, I have to say it was a rude awakening this morning walking to work. It was freezing, 7 degrees. But I'm very well, Emma Arnold. I'm really excited about what we have coming up on tonight's program. Last week, the second annual LBQ Women's Health Conference took place at Victoria AIDS Council. I caught up with Rowena Allen, Victoria's Gender and Sexuality Commissioner, to have a chat about the conference. She attended it, and the importance of platforms such as these to the health and well-being of LBQ women in Australia. And Emma, happy Reconciliation Week.
Thank you, and same to you and same to everybody listening, because it is Reconciliation Week. And so in light of this, and in light as well of the LBQ Women's Conference, we thought we'd take a closer look at some of the issues affecting Australian Indigenous LBQ women in our society. So later on, I'll be speaking with Dr. Vanessa Lee from Sydney University Health Sciences and the Sydney Centre for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Statistics. Vanessa is a social epidemiologist and will be looking at the clash between culture and sexuality.
Later on, we'll also be catching up with Shannon Power from the Star Observer to take a look at today's headlines. As always, we want to hear what you have to say, so send us an email to onair@joy.org.au or text the studio on 0427-JOY-949, or you can tweet us at TheInformerJoy.
And just in case this multitude of platforms was not enough for you, we've made a Facebook page now, so please hit us up, follow and share The Informer on Joy 94.9. You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. If you've just tuned in this evening, we're talking LBQ women's health with a focus on Australian Indigenous LBQ women in light of Reconciliation Week and the VAC ACON Women's Health Conference that was held last Friday. Steph had a chance to catch up with Rowena Allen, the Commissioner for Gender and Sexuality, who attended the event last Friday, and here is what she had to say.
Rowena Allen, thanks for joining us on The Informer this evening.
Pleasure.
So let's just talk about the Women's LBQ Health Conference that took place on Friday. Just to start with, this is the second LBQ Women's Health Conference to take place in Australia. Did you attend last year's event?
No, I didn't. I was in Shepparton last year, so this is my first time, and apparently it was much bigger than last year as well.
Well, I was going to ask you if you had attended last year what the difference was, but you just said it was a lot bigger, so obviously there's been a positive response.
Yeah, full room, and we had a lot of interstate guests and, of course, international as well. So it's certainly putting Victoria on the map, but I think we lose it to Sydney next year. Now it's become a national conference.
Which is a positive thing, I guess.
Oh, it is. It is. We have to share these things around. Not everything fantastic happens in Victoria, apparently.
No. Why do you think there's a need to have an LBQ-focused women's health conference separate from women's health in general?
Well, we don't have a lot of data or research on lesbian, bisexual, trans women or queer women's health. You know, as we do on gay men, we have a bit more. But compared to heterosexual women, there's not a lot of focus or in health promotion in this area. Not really. So it's really important that we actually start collecting the data, because we know some of the issues around cervical screening, smoking, that lesbian women are smoking twice as much as heterosexual women, as are bisexual, trans and queer women. You know, all sorts of different health-related issues are different, and then they're going to need different health responses. And so it's really important that we, you know, we lose that invisibility cloak and we really get down to what the issues are.
And why do you think it has been under an invisibility cloak? Why is there a lack of data?
Well, I did make that joke, actually, in my presentation that, you know, it is hard to believe when, you know, every second woman in the community services field at one stage in my career, you know, was not heterosexual. How can we not have looked at after our own health needs? But it's just been not a priority for funding bodies, or all the research money has come through HIV or other things. So it's been limited or tacked on to the end of something else. And I think it's time, certainly timely, that we, you know, we do our own research And people are more open to being interviewed about their health needs as well. So times are different. It's time to have a look at what we need to do.
I'm not sure if you would agree, but some would say that the G gets more of a plug in LGBTI than the L. Do you hope events like this will better promote LBQ and T women in society?
I always say it's not a competition between the letters in the alphabet. It's about making sure that every letter in the alphabet that makes up our rainbow community gets a fair crack at it. So, you know, it was terrific to see the event.
The keynote speakers at this year's conference included, of course, yourself, but also Beck Johnson. Beck is the co-founder of Indigiles Leadership and Support Group. After hearing what Beck had to say at the conference, how important do you think conferences and or platforms such as this are to minority groups like Indigenous Australian women, or if you like, minority groups within minority groups?
Yeah, that intersection is really important, that we keep raising those voices within the minority within the minority. And, you know, Beck did an amazing job. It was fantastic to share the platform with Rebecca, great woman down from Queensland, to talk about the work that she's done. You know, really powerful stuff, and it's really important. Really important, whether it's Indigenous or multicultural or people living with a disability, you know, all those intersections are really important.
Rowena, the annual LBQ Women's Health Conference has highlighted many health and wellbeing issues facing women, LBQ Indigenous women and non-Indigenous Australian women, but what more needs to be done, do you think?
I think I've raised a few things. I think we need to collect the research to then put the evidence to the funding bodies to get specific, you know, health promotion work done within the LBTQ women's community. I think that's really important, to not be lost in the general health, you know, health sector, but actually pull out some things, as well as training the mainstream health sector, the hospitals, the community health services, not to presume that every woman that comes, you know, that a health professional comes in contact with is heterosexual, and we have different health needs, and I think that's part of it. So developing programs for ourselves, but also making sure that we're educating mainstream service providers as well. It's really important.
Well, Rowena Allen, thanks so much for your time this evening.
My pleasure, Steph. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to Joy 94.9, and this is The Informer. We've just heard from Rowena Allen. Shocking to hear about that lack of data, Steph.
Yeah, it is kind of shocking in this day and age to think that LBQ women's health issues are still very much, as Rowena said, under the invisibility cloak. But joining us now to have a little bit more of a chat, in particular about Australian Indigenous LBQ women, is Dr. Vanessa Lee from the University of Sydney. Vanessa, thanks so much for joining us on The Informer this evening.
Oh, you're welcome. Hi, Steph. Hi, Emma.
Hi.
Vanessa, with so many issues of marginalisation facing someone who's part of a cultural minority, such as the LGBTI community or indeed the LGBTI Australian Indigenous community, in what ways does being part of the Indigenous community add another layer to this?
I guess there's two things at play. There's a lot of racism within the LGBTI community on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, and then within the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community, there's also a lot of homophobia. So you're marginalised both ways.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're a minority within a minority.
Yeah.
Yeah, which
pretty
is
much
quite confronting. And I mean, with a lack of services as well, I mean, what have your statistics found as far as a link between mental health and then the oppression of sexuality? How do the statistics measure up for that?
With Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, one of the things that I have found is, well, A, there is no statistical data on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people identifying as LGBTIQ. There is some data in the HIV data sets, but nothing in the standard Australian data sets. And anecdotally, we know that the LGBTIQ Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population have very high suicide rate. Recently, I did a presentation at a conference for the National Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Suicide Prevention Conference in Alice Springs, and I presented on domestic violence, suicide in Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander sexuality and or gender diverse people. It was quite confronting for a lot of people to hear that there is no identification data. 80 to 60% of sexuality and gender diverse people are susceptible to domestic violence. And considering that the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population itself have a very, very high percentage of domestic violence within the population. So it makes you wonder, why aren't they identifying, and how can we then get them into the standard Australian data set.
Vanessa, in your experience in working with people in Australian Indigenous communities, have you found that there's still a lot of fear when you talk about coming out or being themselves? Do you think that could be associated with these shocking rates of mental health and suicide?
Yes. Look, there is a lot of fear. A lot of it is around the impact from colonisation. When I came out, my grandmother just patted my hand, and it took her nearly 6 weeks to understand what it was to be a lesbian. And then she just looked at me and said, in our culture, she said, we've always had sister girls, which are transgender. And she said they were the holders of both knowledge. The reason we had them was because if we were ever attacked by another clan group, our men's and women's business always lived on. So it was really interesting to hear her say that. And I'm sure I'm not uncommon in saying that, even though that is what came out of my grandmother and that's from my culture, 80 to 90% of my family don't talk to me because of my sexuality. And I think had I not been in medicine and in health, I think it probably would have impacted on me mentally quite badly. But because I've had the support of my grandmother, I was okay. However, majority of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people don't have that support, and the homophobia in communities is quite violent. It's not just slang of words, it's actually quite violent.
Well, as far as these issues do go, and you said yourself you were quite lucky, but there is this fear and all these other ongoing issues. But what is standing out right now is that none of these issues are mainstream dialogue, and none of these issues are at the forefront of any campaign. And I was just wondering, why do you think that these issues, which are so devastating, that have incredible effects on people's lives and can potentially bring the end of somebody's lives, why is this not getting enough attention, do you think?
One of the biggest things is the lack of support. See, silence in the Aboriginal culture, the word silence means that you reflect and then you find the words and you talk about it. Silence in the non-Indigenous culture means it's a dirty little secret. And it's that confusion of language and culture that is really impacting on young people. One of the other things that is majorly an important issue is the lack of identification. People don't feel safe enough to identify. And when you think about it in the terms of health, primary healthcare services, the majority that deliver to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander run, and there's almost about 65 to 68% of them, and those organisations are run by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. And if people are experiencing homophobia in their own community, they're not going to identify, and if they're not going to identify, then we don't have the information to put into policy to make the changes.
I also was just going to ask you, in your research and your work over the last, how many years have you been working on your PhD?
That was 10 years.
10 years. Ooh. 10 years. Well, congratulations.
Yeah, wow. Can we take a moment?
In your 10 years of research and study and work, how much opportunity has there been for you to communicate your findings to the broader community or your own community?
I've only just started, and I've been doing it to the broader community. What I've been doing is being very strategic, because one of the things that is utmost important to me is not to disrespect my culture or my family or my people. And so so in line with my work is how I've been delivering the data sets about the LGBTI or sexuality and or gender diverse Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. I'm an epidemiologist and a social epidemiologist, and I just do it through my work. So what findings I find in service delivery is the approach that I'm taking, and majority of the people that I want to target are actually in health services. So if I can change the mindset in the health services, at least when the data is recorded for Medicare payments or Centrelink payments or whatever in communities, at least it's done without stigma. It's done just because you're a person.
Absolutely, and you're being a spokesperson for people who too often have other people speaking up for them. But I was just wondering, for young people who are dealing with this clash between their sexuality and their culture, is there any particular words of advice you would give to anybody who could be listening right now?
Yes, what I would say is just stand up, and there are people that will listen to you. One of the biggest things I found from the conference was that the term sexuality and gender diverse seems to work better with Aboriginal communities rather than the term LGBTI, because people just don't understand what LGBTI is. but they understand sexuality and gender diverse people. And that is really important.
So it's more like if we can get this shift in the language and stop seeing it. Because, I mean, for a lot of people, if LGBT has become stigmatized and people are stuck in their ways, it can be hard to break that down. But if we start looking at it in a different way, because, I mean, we can't look at it in a static way. It's so fluid. It's so, there's so many different facets of this issue that we can't look at it in a static way and expect to get a good result as such.
Yeah, exactly. But we see in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander language, we don't have lesbian, gay, bi, transgender, intersex. So those words don't even exist in our languages. So to say someone is sexuality and gender diverse, it actually helps to shift the mindset. And that's what we need to do.
Language is definitely important. And I guess it sort of makes me wonder, with your research and the work that you're doing, who are you targeting? Is it the government, or are you hoping to target communities and work with grassroots organisations? Although there aren't many. Earlier we spoke about one called Indigiles, who are doing great things up in Queensland. But who are you hoping to target, and who are you hoping to work with and motivate?
Well, I have two approaches that I'm taking. One is to work with the Australian Bureau of Statistics to look at the limitations and to see how we can get Indigenous LGBTI identification into the data sets in a respectful way, and how to measure that. And the other one I'm looking at is how to work with health services to get to stop the shame around being a sexuality and gender diverse person, or LGBTI Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person. So it's the two angles that I'm taking.
Absolutely. But then I guess the next part of that is applying that to the broader community. And I suppose with problems such as, you know, discrimination, sexism and racism and homophobia being commonplace for the lives of many Indigenous people in the broader LGBTI community, how exactly do you think people can learn to understand and treat this in a way that's culture sensitive, just in the broader community, well, I suppose?
Yeah, I guess in the broader community, I also sit on the interagency, New South Wales Interagency for Domestic Violence in the LGBTI community, as an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander person. Even in that space, it's a start, and I discuss these issues in that space as well to try and cut down the domestic violence, the amount of domestic violence experienced by LGBTIQ Indigenous people. So that is a start. And the other way, I think, is also through participating in events like the Having a Voice in the Safer School program. You know, just a simple strategy to include sexuality and gender diverse Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander voices, I think, is these are just small steps, but at the same time, the ripple effect will be huge.
Absolutely, and we look forward to seeing more of this ripple effect. Thanks very much to the work you're doing, and thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Informer on Joy 94.9. We've just heard from the wonderful Dr. Vanessa Lee, and in a moment we'll be joined by Shannon Power from the Star Observer. But first, another member from our lovely Informer family, Scott, joins us for a quick rundown of what you may or may not have heard last night. Scott.
Good evening, Em and Steph. Last night was riveting television.
Absolutely.
I'm talking about possibly all the reality TV programs, because on ABC there was it was the political debate.
The leaders. It was another reality TV program.
It was reality, but the word riveting I would not use. What did you think of it?
Well, I started watching it thinking this is good. Well, you know, I was trying to drag my younger brother, trying to engage the younger generation in politics, and I failed because he sat down with me for 5 minutes and I think we both turned to our laptops and started doing other things, unfortunately.
I'd use the word safe. I'd use the word boring. But there was some interesting parts. Now, you had a favourite.
Well, I like the schoolyard squabbles. I think I was just sort of off in my little world doing something, and then I heard Shorten kind of snap at Turnbull for interrupting him, and I thought that was quite funny.
Yeah, they were fairly civil, I have to say, but there was one little stab that Shorten had at Turnbull, basically saying that he leads his party, whereas Malcolm Turnbull's led by his party. Very, very interesting. Now, last night, our community was not mentioned at all in the debate, even though it's, you know, pre-election, it was quite a central theme. Since the election, hasn't been a lot said. So it's really interesting that Malcolm Turnbull said this today.
we'll hold it as soon as possible after the election. Given that the election's on the 2nd of July, we do have ample time between then and the end of the year. So I would expect it to be held this calendar year, but it will be held as soon as practical, as obviously legislation has got to pass through the Parliament. All I can do is give you my commitment to hold the plebiscite as soon as we can, and it'll be a very straightforward question, and we'll be asking the Australian people whether they support the definition of marriage being extended to include couples of the same sex.
The lovely Shannon Power from the Star Observer. Shannon, thanks for coming on.
Hello, everybody. How are we tonight?
I would say we're good. Everybody, are we all good? Everyone, yeah,
yep.
Yeah, we're good.
Not
everyone's
all
good.
Around.
Well,
that's
actually,
good to hear.
Could you tell us how Malcolm Turnbull is with the same-sex marriage plebiscite coming up?
Well, he just sort of seems to keep digging himself into a hole, because as far as we were aware, we thought that if the Liberal Party gets back into government after the July 2nd election, we would be having a plebiscite in November. That was a sort of general time frame that was given, and now he's saying it could be at any time before the end of the year. So again, we're just seeing the Liberal Party being very wishy-washy about this topic, about this issue, and not really committing to anything. I mean, he sounded like he had a bit of conviction when he said that it would be held before the end of the year, but we've seen him, I guess, let us down before when it comes to the marriage equality debate.
I'm getting major trust issues, actually. And in other news, boobs the word in the new ACON campaign.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. It's a great campaign. So ACON is the sexual health organisation, an LGBTI health organisation generally here in New South Wales. And they've launched this really interesting, amazing campaign for women to start getting their boobs checked out more, because LGBTI women are very underrepresented when it comes to breast screening, but they also have a higher rate of breast cancer than other populations. So it's very important that women get tested. But what they're also saying is, yes, if you're over 50, you need to get screened regularly. I think it's every 2 years. But they're also saying if you're under that age group, no matter how young you are, get to know your boobs, so that if something changes and if a lump does appear, you know when it's not right and it's not supposed to be there. So it's a very community-led approach where they're like, right, talk to your friends, talk to your colleagues, talk to people in the community about it, and let's really make sure that we're getting out there and looking after our health and, you know, our boobs more specifically.
Yeah, taking care of the boobs. It should be at the forefront of most campaigns. And then
absolutely.
Leading on from the discussion we actually had earlier today, there is a new retreat for trans and gender diverse Aboriginal people, which is great news as well.
Absolutely. And I think the Victorian government just wants to keep cementing itself as the most progressive government in this country. And they're actually hosting a... it's called Kunga, which means gathering in the local language there. And it's a brother boys and sister girls retreat, and it's for trans and gender diverse Aboriginal people to come together to speak, you know, to speak without shame about the issues that they face. And I think just to sort of have like a friendly environment for a couple of days. Now, that's being held in November, and it's sort of an idea that came off the 2015 Victorian Koori Youth Summit. So obviously these recommendations came up and the Victorian government listened, and they're putting together this this really fantastic regional initiative for trans and gender diverse Aboriginal people in Victoria to get amongst it and you know, be safe in a comfortable place.
That's great. I mean, I feel like anything that's supporting the underdogs, we're all for it. And thank you so much for coming through with the news as always, Shannon.
Thank you for having me. Have a great night.
You too. All right. A massive thank you to all of our guests today on your Monday edition of The Informer. Rowena Allen, of course, Dr. Vanessa Lee and Shannon Power. A full rundown of today's story will be on the Joy website shortly. And today's show was produced by Stephanie McLean and myself. I'm Emma Arnold, by the way, if you're wondering whose voice you've been listening to.
For a podcast of today's program and other stories, visit joy.org.au/The Informer. The Informer will be back tomorrow at 6:30. Up next is Outtakes with Daniel and Alan. I'm Stephanie McLean.
And I'm Emma Arnold, and thanks once again for tuning in.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.